Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Another edition of Inside College Soccer. Got a couple staff members on today. We were talking the other day, Chris and Andre, about just the current status and how things have changed over the last few years. And, transfer portal isn't brand new, but it's certainly having a bigger impact on college teams, it seems like, as every year goes on. I know Andre and Chris, you guys have been having conversations with college coaches. What have they been telling you, Andre, about the transfer portal? What are you noticing change over the last couple of years?
Well, I think, there's a difference between the men's and the women's, right? I think that the majority of the conversations that I have with, men's coaches, they've all indicated that their first thought process is they're going to go into the transfer portal first, seek what comes out of that, and then they're going to look at the 2026 class after that window closes. So, I've even had, Power Four conferences reach out to me asking me, hey, do you know anything about this Division II kid? Do you know anything about this other kid? And so I think that the nature of the college game on the men's side, and Chris, you might disagree with me or not, but I just feel like there's less development being done now at the college side. And it's more about, especially in the Division I side, it's more about coming in and just being an impact player immediately. And I think because of the roster cuts, coaches are a little bit less hesitant taking a risk on an unproven 17, 18-year-old. And they want to go with something that's a little bit, statistically, there's some concrete evidence that they can produce at the collegiate level.
What about you, Chris? What kind of conversations have you been having with coaches about this?
Yeah, similar. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with what Andre just said. Obviously you mentioned about development. I think that's definitely how it's gone. We can't speak for everyone. But ultimately, it just seems now, if you had to kind of give a generic sort of answer for like how these four-year schools are doing things, it's finding players who are ready rather than developing players. And ultimately, it's about winning. A lot of these coaches, I mean, there's a percentage of coaches who are just happy in their job and they've got safety to just do whatever they want and it doesn't matter what the results get. But the majority of them are looking to obviously improve their careers, win stuff. And that ultimately means if they've got the ability to bring transfers in, they're going to try and get the best players possible. And I get that. If when I was with Andre in Spain the other week, I said, like, what would you do if you were like a mid-major Division One or any school, any four-year school? I would ultimately not be looking at high school players off the bat. The only ones I'd be looking at and be aiming for right away is the ones who are national team, top sort of professional club ones in the US, internationally, whatever that is, because that's kind of like the proven scouting's been done with that. But I just want players who are going to come and make the, as they always say, an immediate impact. That's the favorite word we've heard for the last 10 years, but now it's becoming more and more and more like, Chris, not even interested in any players who are not transfers. Like, just tell us who's a transfer. We'll get to that point in the end, because eventually the transfers will run out and we'll go, okay, there's not what we need in the transfer portal. Then we'll go into the other pot. So, yeah, on the women's side, like you say, it's a little bit different, but I primarily deal with the men's side. So everything Andre has just said, I agree with.
Andre, having coached in women's soccer for 5 years?
Yeah.
Why do you think the women's side is different than the men's side? Why do you think it's an accelerated recruiting table, as many say, from up to a year to 2 years in advance of the men? And why do you think it's looked, the women's side's looked at differently?
Honestly, I think that at 16, 17, you can probably look at a female player and say, this is where she's at athletically. And, you know, we can get her a little bit stronger, we can get her a little bit quicker. And the athleticism component is such a huge piece of recruiting on the women's side. Whereas I think on the men's side, you know, you have to hit all the marks on the men's side. And the physicality aspect of it takes a little bit longer from a development, and there's a big difference in terms of strength, right? On the men's side. But on the female side, I think there's more of an idea and a thought process. If this player is athletic enough, we can get her here, and she'll develop because she'll be in a good environment and she'll be a good player. And I think on the men's side, the coaches have a tendency to say, hey, you know what? We want to see this player at their oldest or when they're at this age, because they're competing against a 22 or 23-year-old male. And there's a big difference between being 16 and being 23 on the men's side. I think on the girls' side and on the women's side, you know, at 17, you could probably compete pretty effectively with a 21-year-old, you know, from a physicality standpoint.
Can I just add in there as well? I think there's something else to add. The supply and demand is completely different as well.
Yeah.
So
That's a
there's a
big
lot.
piece, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big piece. You can maybe touch on it, but yeah, on the male side, there's a lot. Well, not a lot less teams, but there's less men's soccer teams, and there's a lot of males around the world, domestically, internationally, who want to play in college. And then on the women's side, there's a lot more teams. And ultimately, like, there's not as many girls, and some of these teams are scraping everywhere, looking under everything. So that's why they're getting, I mean, take away the sort of, are they physically ready, athletically there at 16, 15? That's a piece of it. But also, like, it's just getting to the players early because there's not as many available. So that's another piece of it. Also, I would say as well, Don, it could be worth talking about, like, what actually is the transfer portal? Some people have no
Yeah.
idea.
That's a fair question. You want to describe that, how that works?
Yeah, I mean, in layman's terms, it's just an online database that is opened up a few times a year where people who want to transfer from an NCAA school put themselves in it. It's a very basic system. It just has like the name and like the school and not much else really. And it's just a way, and it's the newer way of transferring. Before that, I mean, if you wanted to transfer, it was a bit of a big deal. You'd have to go speak to the coach and get permission, and like it was a everyone's the anxiety was there, and yeah, it's a big deal. Now it's just easy. Enter the transfer portal, and we'll touch upon like entering the transfer portal and how many come out of that. I'm sure we can talk about that in a bit, but yeah, it's a database that is only allowed for, well, it's basically Division One and Division Two players. No Division Three players in there, if I believe that's right. And then yeah, but people talk about the transfer portal, but there's no junior colleges in there, no NAIA, no other associations. Is
And
that
there's a different
good?
timeline too, because Division Two, there's no, I don't think there's a timeline for them to enter. And whereas, you know, Division One, there are certain windows that are open. And that's, you know, I think that's a big difference as well. And, you know, the other part too is that it was created to protect the student athletes, because, like, you know, you were saying, Chris, in the beginning, a coach could deny the players, in the past, a coach could deny their request to get into the, you know, to transfer, and the player would have to sit out a year, right? And so this allows the player to immediately be able to compete the following year, or the next semester, join a program in the next semester without a penalty against them.
It's essentially a transfer marketplace. That's what it is.
And
You
yeah,
know,
well, it's got limited information in there, of course. There's people you know. I mean, it's not like coaches can see film or, you know, it's even statistics, but it's a beginning of a shopping list for coaches.
and there will literally be assistant coaches that will sit at home when the transfer portal windows open, and they will go through that transfer portal on a daily and check every single player that's in there to figure out, okay, from our database, who are these players that we knew from the past, and who are these players that are currently on in terms of like what schools are coming from, what conferences are they coming from, and they're tracking their stats. They're looking at their stats and they're trying to find film and they're trying to dig up as much information as they can about these players. So it's not a it's not a perfect science, but these coaches are researching in as much as they can about each individual player and looking at statistics.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about was the pecking order. I often describe it like, you're at the schoolyard, you're picking up two 11-a-side teams. They're going to play at lunchtime. They're going to play against each other. Well, it's always the two best players that are the captains because it's like it's not fair if those two are on the same team together. So they split them up, and those are the captains. And then no captain goes and says, "I'll take the worst player first." They always pick the next best player and the next best player until you get down to the worst players. So there's a pecking order in college soccer, and it also works in reverse, right? In that, Stanford gets to pick first, and or Indiana gets to pick first. The best teams in the country are going to pick the best players in the world that are available to them. So I wanted to talk about what that looks like at the youth level, the pecking order. But then, Chris, maybe you can address that, and then Andre, maybe you can address what that looks like at the transfer level. How that pecking order works. How does it work on the world level, Chris? Because obviously you're in Europe, you're watching what's going on in Spain and in England and over in Europe. What does it look like? What's the youth soccer pecking order look like, filtering down into the US?
In terms, do you mean like the coaches, where are they going first in the youth market?
Yeah, do they go to MLS Next first? Is that their first
Right,
choice
yeah.
of players? Is it what's the first thing that they want? Since it is a worldwide sport, and one of the complaints we hear from parents is how many, almost 35% of the men in NCAA and about 17% of the women are coming from other countries. So what's the pecking order look like? What are college coaches asking for? What's their wish list look like?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's different sort of wish lists dependent on what the school and what pecking order the school is in, if that makes sense. So, for example, if you're Stanford versus I won't say names, but like in a, like a lower level Division Two
Well,
or
let's start with the big names, because
all right. Well,
those big names
the big
seem to
names
be on
they
every player's list. So
yeah.
let's
Well,
start with
I'll give
that.
you well just as a side note. Like for example, today I got an email from somebody, a parent who is based in the Far East. They're a British family, and they've basically said we're interested in our son playing in the US, and they've listed the top five schools, pretty much. And this player is a player who plays just at a regular club, not national team, not a professional club, nothing like that. So, anyway, that's what typically happens. And the reason I say that is these top schools are getting hundreds, if not thousands, of unsolicited emails and requests to join their teams. They only need a handful every year. So with that, they can pick the best. And if you look at, we don't have to name the schools, but the top schools, they'll go to the national team players. So like obviously they might watch the 16s, the 17s, the 18s, 19s, kind of keep an eye on that. Like college now is not the first choice pathway for these professional players that will go to Europe or play in the MLS, go to MLS Next Pro and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily the pathway. So they'll try and get the best that are available for college, and then they'll typically look in the well. If I'm brutally honest with you, it's MLS Next, and they'll look at the MLS Next academies, and then the teams that are not actual MLS clubs and ECNL, and as horrible as it sounds, and all the other divisions and alphabet soup leagues, whatever you want to call them, respectfully, they'll look at, well, will they even look at them? Probably not, right? So that's, there's an air of like, there's two things here. One, they've only got a certain amount of resources and time. And two, this soccer and sport in general, I mean, people believe that the cream will rise to the top. So if you're a top player within the US, you're going to be in and around the MLS sort of academy area, national team. You're going to be in and around that. So if you're Stanford University, why would you go watching random showcases in the middle of Arkansas with some rec? Do you know what I mean? There's no point in doing that. And then internationally, They're obviously I mean, we're one of the sort of like people who do this, but there's agencies popping up absolutely everywhere. And in the last few years, there's just an unbelievable amounts more. And I think social media is a massive part of that because you see things online. And if you're in a different country and you see this American system, you're like, wow, that's really, really good for the 18 to 22 sort of period. This has opened up more players from professional clubs across the world and national team level players. Like we've had players who play, many players who've played national team U19, U17, U18, and we've had players at professional clubs. So that's the sort of like pecking order. They'll look at them first, but people really, really don't understand, like, one, how many players these coaches need, which is not many every year, and two, realistically, where are they on the pecking order? So these top universities are actually classed in essence as top professional clubs. It's almost like Real Madrid versus my team in League One in England, Bradford City, trying to recruit, and one's a lower division school. You're not going to compete. But if I just kind of then flip it, the like let's say like junior colleges, as an example, actually, junior colleges. Americans for many years have kind of turned their nose up at junior colleges, and I'm a former product, so is Andre, and I'm a massive advocate because of one, you get to play straight away, and two, you're only there for a few years. There's no one really older than 20 years old, so it's kind of much more like I say, you can play straight away. So these junior colleges are able to recruit players internationally who have no idea about the divisions, and then they can bring him in and make it like a junior college could be the best team in the whole country out of all the divisions if they wanted to do that. Because the Americans typically would go to certain colleges and divisions. So I'm kind of going off topic now, but yeah, the pecking order. And then if you kind of move down from the sort of like top schools, they kind of get the best of the rest. And then sometimes they might be able to get one of the better players. I mean, for example, what the player who's at Ohio State, the guy who played in England, played in the Premier League for Newcastle, might have been just a sub. People say, like, I see it in the comments, yeah, but he's only a substitute appearance one game. I mean, playing against Chelsea in the Premier League or being in and around Newcastle first team, like, it's a massive achievement. Like, I don't even understand like how people can argue that. And he was just on a youth contract type thing, and it didn't work out. He got released, but it was involved with that. Not many people can say they played in the Premier League, right? And he was actually committed, and people don't know this, to a Division Two school, one of the top 25 Division Two schools. And then it got circulated where Ohio State then ended up getting him. Because ultimately, I mean, the Division Two school, another coach there, he said, like, I couldn't compete when Ohio State came in because they're a bigger school. They were top ranked team last year. So, yeah, they've got the pick of the best. Does that explain? I'm
How
missing
does
anything
that
there?
work, Chris? So how, when American parents see that kind of a thing going on, they go, wait a minute, he was playing professionally, clearly, had to have had an agent or something, was probably under a pro contract. The assumption is he was under a pro contract, and an American player can't go sign a pro contract and play in the MLS and then go back to college. So how does that work with a player like that?
Yeah, well, it ultimately comes down to how much money was made. That's what it is. So all this thing about, like, I mean, you see what it's like in some of the Facebook groups we're in, and people sometimes quite rightly so saying, like, how's this happened, or so many internationals, etc. He was paid. I mean, I know how much it wasn't one of our clients, but I know how much he was paid. It wasn't as much as people think, being a professional soccer player. But ultimately, what does professional mean? People say, like, oh, he's a pro soccer player, and you've said it before, Don. That just sometimes you're paying to play as well. So he might be making a certain amount of money, but his actual expenses to live is more. So how it worked was, by what I'm told anyway, whatever he earned playing professional soccer was it's covered. That's all the money he needed to live. So, like, for example, let's say he got X amount, and then at the end of the month he had no money left because it paid for his car to get to training, his accommodation, his food, his things like that. That's how the NCAA look at it. So they look at your expenses. And a lot of Americans just think he's been a pro, that's not fair. But what does professional even mean? If he's earning 10 grand a week and only spending 1,000 of that, and that's different. And I've
Yeah,
seen.
let me interject there, Chris. Like
Go for it.
when kids are at MLS academies, the MLS academies pay for their housing, pay for their tuition, pay for their travel, pay for the coaching fees. They pay the whole thing.
So are they professional?
Are they professional?
Because they're getting paid for.
But they're still considered amateur because they're not on the senior team, correct? But it's the same concept for a lot of these, for a lot of it. They're getting their housing, they're getting their foods, they're getting their travel expenses versus another American kid that has to, travel for platform games. The parents are taking care of everything. That's the part that when I try to explain that to somebody, they'll say, well, I mean, no, it's different. I'm like, no, it's not. Is sometimes those kids even get an opportunity. I have kids that are currently at MLS academies. And they're getting, first team training opportunities, and they're at those MLS academies. Are they a pro or are they not a pro? Is a pro, you have to earn a certain. It's like you said, it's they're covering their living expenses,
Yeah, and I think
which
above
could
that,
be very different,
and I think above that, then obviously it becomes an issue. But when it's internationals, it hits harder because people are like, they're taking away our American spots, and that's a different sort of issue. But they use that as almost like an argument. But yeah, ultimately it's the same thing. Like these MLS Academy players who are getting everything paid for, it's the same thing. Just the clubs are paying the player to pay for his stuff. If that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
But also,
No,
just to add to that as well, like some players, I mean, we've had clients ourselves who've played in the USL, and that's a professional league, and they've been given a certain contract to be able to play in the USL. So they're not deemed ineligible. I mean, I'd be interested to know, like, if someone played in the MLS under a youth sort of contract. I know the MLS is completely different compared to the rest of the world. That's why it probably is like this. But, if there's a certain amount of injuries and into Miami, like they haven't got any players at all, so they have to bring up some of their MLS Academy players. Like, I'd be interested to know if that's like a thing now, where if that player then played in the MLS, is he not eligible to play in college? Like, for me, it doesn't make sense if he'd been made ineligible because of that. But I don't know the ins and outs of that one, to be honest with you.
I don't even know if it's possible, because I know MLS, if you make the 28-man roster, that there's a minimum that you have to be paid. Can they get around that with a youth player? I don't even know the
Well,
answer to that.
that's the thing. It's different in England and, well, everywhere apart from America, because you have these roster caps, salary caps, and you've got to be brought into that, and you've got to get minimums, etc. In England, for example, the player we're talking about, who was at Newcastle, they obviously had injuries. He's playing in the youth team, the U18s, and maybe the U21s, and then just like, okay, we need some substitutes. So he's been brought in, and then they're like, you know what? We're winning. There you go. Have a game. And he's still making a couple $100 a week at that point. Do you know what I mean? So
Right.
it's a different setup. He didn't have to get his contract like automatically triggered to a minimum MLS rookie salary. And that's why it's
How
different. And
about
that's
the
you look
transfer
at.
portal, Andre? Is there a pecking order coming out of the transfer portal?
Yeah, I would say that, like Chris said, the P4s are gonna have the pick of the litter. For lack of better words, right? They can pick anybody, and then the mid-major Division ones will be the next. And typically, what happens is this: is kids will commit to a P4, they won't play at a P4. They'll recognize that they're probably not going to play. They're going to look to transfer P4 to P4 laterally, and the coaches will look at, okay, statistically, you have 0 minutes, you have 0 games played. we're probably not going to help you, know, we're not going to take you because you're not going to help us. Or maybe a team that is on the bottom half of that P4 conference might take the kid that is at the top half because they would have never had that opportunity in the first place. And that kid that's on that top team might think like, okay, it's not that much of a step down. I'll go to that team, but it'll be it'll augment that other team's roster a little bit by picking up that player. Then what happens typically is if they can't go laterally across, then they'll look to come down. Now, as a mid-major, when I was a mid-major coach for 18 years as a head coach, things were really different because we didn't have the transfer portal. So for us, it was who had we recruited before? And oh, now they want to come down. Now they want to come and contact us, right? Like, I know the player, I know who the kid is. I've recruited that player before. That's a good fit for me, right? That would be a great fit for me. But I think now how it looks is the college coaches will, at a mid-major, will say, hey, that kid's coming from a P4. That kid's been vetted to play at that level. And so we're going to go after that kid. After that, it's another drop. And then kids start thinking, okay, where am I going to go to play? Where am I going to go that it's what I'm willing to accept. What I have found is that most kids are not willing to drop down a division. That's what I've found in the past, is that a Division One kid doesn't want to play at Division Two because it's not what I worked for. It's below what I think. So they'll just stop playing. They'll just go to the school and they'll stay at the school, or they'll pick a school and then that's where they'll go. And I've had kids reach out to me that have had 0 minutes at their mid-major schools, and they're like, we're looking to transfer. These are the five schools I'm looking to transfer to. And I'm like, these are all Power Four schools. You're not going to play there, right? And so there's a definite, like, it just goes lateral down, lateral down, lateral down. And I think it really comes down to those college coaches figuring out, okay, is this a kid that we want to take a risk on that never got any minutes? And then it comes down to a kid saying, yeah, I'm willing to accept, transferring to a mid-major, or transferring to Division Two, or even transferring to Division Three. And
Right.
I've seen more kids now, transfer late, going into a senior year with the anticipation of saying, I still have 2 years left. I'm going to transfer to go to this school so I can get an extra year at there for a master's program. And that's happening a lot for a lot of kids, especially kids that are looking to go into business, right? They'll transfer to schools to do that. So there's some strategy that these kids are doing, and they're kind of understanding that. And Chris, you, Don, and I had this conversation that there's some people behind the scenes right now, telling kids like, oh, do this, do that. And it's I don't feel personally it's very ethical, but it's happening.
What do you mean, Andre? What do you mean?
I just think that there's people that have worked with people in the past, and they're like, hey, you know what? This school is looking for a player. Like, oh, this school reached out to us asking us, do you know of any players that you coached or that you did this that are looking to possibly get into the transfer portal or looking to transfer? That's happening all the time. And you could see it now on X, right? On social media, kids getting posting that they're gonna get into the transfer portal before the transfer portal opens up 2 weeks in advance. So they're trying to get ahead of the curve in terms of when the transfer portal opens. Someone's advising him to do that, right? Someone's telling him like, hey, get in front of this so that other coaches know who you are before the wave comes in, right? It's like the storm is coming. The waves are going to come crashing soon, and it's going to be pretty fierce. So these kids are trying to get on the front end of it, so that people can still see clearly what's in front of them, instead of like when. What was the number last year for the transfer portal? Is there a stat for that? Like, how many kids hit that? I mean,
It's hard to
I thought it was
tell
like,
because it's hard to tell, Andre, because as kids enter the portal, I mean, they could enter the portal 1 week and be off the portal the next week. So it's not like it gives you a total. So I always go by what college coaches tell me is in there, and it's well into the thousands.
yeah. So I mean, there's a wave coming.
It's well into the thousands. And the interesting stats that I kind of pulled up, and anybody at home that wants to do this, if you just go in, just Google NCAA soccer transfer portal stats, you can pull up the D1 and the D2 stats for men and for women. And I found the interesting stat is that on the women's side, Division One, about 30% never came off the portal. In other words, in the NCAA is assuming they just never got a home. On the men's side, it's almost 40%. Division two on the women's side, it's almost 60%. And on the men's side, it's almost 60%.
These are kids
So
that didn't find a home or that did find a home.
that never came off the portal. So in other words, the NCAA says that they're assuming it's safe to assume that these kids never found another home.
Yeah, I'd say majority of them didn't find another home, but some might have gone back to the team, but that must be few, a small percentage.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to. There's a stat on there, withdrew from the portal. So if they
Okay.
came back to the same team, then they just withdraw from the portal.
Okay,
These are
so does
kids.
everyone in the
This is the
poll
percent.
then should that means they haven't found a team? That must be.
Yeah,
The percentage of players that never came off the portal. Exactly.
and yeah, and that doesn't it doesn't indicate if a kid decided that, look, I'm not going to go to, I'm no longer going to play at institution A. I'm just going to go home and go to institution B and just go to school there. It doesn't show that, right?
Well, if the kid went from Division One to junior college, then they wouldn't need to come off the portal. But if they went from NCAA to NCAA, they would need to come off the portal.
Well, no, I'm just
So,
saying outside of soccer. Like, if they decide to go and just be done with soccer, they're not going
oh,
to
just
play.
go to school, then they wouldn't care. They wouldn't put
Yeah,
in,
it, they're
but it
so they're
means they're
still in
not
the
playing anymore, right?
so they're in
That's
this
the
they're but
point.
they're still yeah, but they're still in the portal, right? And
Means they're not
that's
playing anymore. And
yeah.
we ran some stats last year and showed only about 50% of the end Division One kids stay Division One. About 30% go to Division Two. About 15% go to Division Three, and then the other remaining percent ends up, JC, NAIA, or just quitting altogether.
I think, and Chris, you and I can maybe talk about that because this part, because we're both junior college products. I think that a really overlooked component is the 424 aspect of transferring.
Which means what, Andre? Explain for
So
those listening.
you start at a 4-year school, and let's say year one, you're like, I'm not going to play. I want to play. I'm probably not going to play the second year. So then you transfer to a 2-year school, right? A junior college. But the rule is, even if you are a qualifier out of college, if you go from a 4-year school to a 2-year school, you have to get your AA from that institution to transfer back out to a 4-year school.
Right.
I always feel like that was like a that's like a great way, especially if you go to a school, you technically redshirt that first year at a 4-year school. It's like taking a gap year almost, right? You kind of
Right,
redshirt.
right.
And then you go to a 2-year school. Now you're 20 years old, 21 years old, playing, 40, 44 games in that 2-year period. And now you're transferring back to a 4-year school as a 22-year-old or a 21-year-old with 44 games in your bucket. Plus, you've already trained at a 4-year school and you understand exactly what that level is like. And then you go to a 4-year school. Now you're a full adult. You have played a lot of games, you've gotten a lot of experience, and I just feel like you have a better perspective of what it's going to be really like, right? At the next transfer aspect of it. So academically, they're probably, pretty well adjusted. From a soccer standpoint, they're pretty well adjusted. From a physical maturation, they're pretty well adjusted. And then when they go into that last 2 years at a 4-year school, you're still getting the opportunity, but at a much older level. So I just think that kids forget that there's that opportunity. And the most important part is you're probably saving $30,000 to $40,000 a year by doing that you can use for year three, the last 2 years for your 4-year experience. And then you can be a little bit choosier about where you're wanting to go, and you can invest a little bit more money. So that's a part that I think that people don't understand, that there is a massive benefit to doing the 424 if you find the right place in the right school that's going to help you develop and get to that next point. And technically speaking, if you're a Division One player and you're looking to transfer down to a Division Two, or a junior college, you're probably going to get a lot of scholarship money.
I think 100%. I think money is like the financial part is like kind of like the kind of bit everyone doesn't really talk about because they talk about labels, Division One, blah blah blah, and the money is a kind of secondary thing. But like what you just said there, if you're a Division One player, or even a Division Two player, or just or to be honest with you, if I'm a JUCO coach and there's a player who's at a 4-year school, and he's whatever, I'm looking at him and thinking, all right. Yeah, it could be worth bringing to us for a year or two. There's a couple of things that people don't even realize. I mean, one, the whole NJCAA thing, where the potentially that might not count towards your eligibility. That's a conversation for another day, but that could be a thing in the future where you go do that, and then actually you've still got 4 years left after that. But then the massive thing I think people really never talk about. The portal has X amount of players. You can just sit there like we've got X amount of players in the portal, and this amount of players don't leave it. But no one's talking about how many NAIA schools and players there are, junior college. So like, I always say to
Truth.
people, when you look at these 4-year schools, and like I say, we can complain about where they're getting them from and whatnot, but reverse engineer, I do it all the time, and I sometimes put it on social media. I'll say, oh, I've looked at. I think I did it the other week with Ohio State as an example. Because I've got a client in the minute, and I'm kind of digress a second. I've got a client in the minute who wants to go to Ohio State, family's there, and I've just said to him, just look at who they're recruiting. You're not in that profile. So it's like, for example, national team level players, like say MLS, guys who play the Premier League, etc. And reverse engineer that sort of thing. But like say, there's also like players from junior college. I can guarantee you at the JUCO Nationals, which will be anytime soon in the next, maybe in the
Two
next month
weeks,
anyway,
next 2 weeks.
next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of 4-year schools there. It's getting more and more every year. Like, and they're looking at them because they're proven college players. Now, some schools can't take junior college players in, that's a small percentage, but like they're proven college players. And kind of going back to what you were saying a little bit earlier. These coaches, I've had four or five this last few weeks, said to me, Chris, send me across your top players for 2026 and let me know which of your players are going in the transfer portal, right? So everyone's kind of playing the game a little bit. When we've had some top players go in the transfer portal, these top players have had 40, 50 offers in the first 24 hours because people get wind of this. And yeah, so there's kind of different, I mean, there's kind of different sort of category of players in the transfer portal. There's the ones who are good to move up, and there's the ones who are not good enough, so they have to move down. That's probably the easiest way to explain it, but there's probably other ones in between as well. But yeah.
And outside of the transfer portal, like in terms of coaches, using like agencies and everything else, don't forget that these players all have teammates that play somewhere else from club. So those coaches are getting wind of who's transferring or who's looking to transfer. A player will go, "Hey, coach, just letting you know so and so is looking to transfer." And he might be or she might be at a really good school. And that coach is like, "Huh, interesting." Well, when he gets in the transfer,
USL
what?
two. USL two is a big one in the summer.
And like, hey, if he's looking to transfer, or she's looking to transfer, and she gets in the portal, he gets in the portal, let me know. And they've already done their research, right, on the front end. They know exactly who that kid is before, and it's within 24 hours, it's done. Like they'll make a phone call and it's already done within 24 hours. Like 100%, I'm going to go to school there. See ya. It's done. It's finished. Over. I mean, it happens in football. It happens in basketball. It happens. It's happening in soccer now, and that's the reality. And like doors open and doors close really, really fast at the next level. But I do
At
think,
least
John.
for the top players, right, Andre? I mean,
Yeah.
the kid who's at a Division I school that's number 210 in the nation, has only won one game, and this kid hasn't gotten a single minute of any of that. We're not talking about that player.
No. We're talking like at the higher levels. But
Right.
even mid majors, they know. They know who those kids are, and they've recruited them, and they know that, and they talk to their, these kids all talk, and it's different than back when we all went to school where we had to go to a payphone and make a phone call. They're texting each other, they're DMing each other, like they're following each other. And these kids know, they're like, okay, you're having a much better experience than I am. And so if there's a window, I'll go there because, it's going to be a good situation for me, a much better situation that I'm in. And then, I also feel like I had a kid go to a camp at a Division I school, and this was the response that the coach gave him. Hey, you're a really good player. I don't know if you're going to be able to play, step on the field year one, year two. Based on our roster numbers, here's my advice. Go to a Division II school or go to a junior college, and then your junior year, let's connect, and we'll definitely it'd be a good situation for you based on the numbers that we have.
And that's that
And
just Andre, just jumping there, that's exactly what was said to one of my clients who's a is a Jamaican youth international, lives outside of the US but got a great US resident. He was told exactly the same thing.
yeah, I mean, they're just saying we just don't have, and there's a, and I don't think people really talk about this enough, is that because of this transfer portal, or not, excuse me, transfer portal, but the roster limitations of 28, it has completely changed the ability of a coaching staff to recruit. And so, where in the past you're maybe taking on number 29, 30, 31, 32 to keep, to add on your roster, you don't have that luxury anymore of having a guy sit on your roster or a female player sit on your roster for a couple of years to develop them. Or maybe, hey, get here, ride out the fall season. We're just gonna train. You're gonna train. You're not gonna get games in. And as soon as all these players graduate, it's your time. They don't have that luxury anymore. They can't do that. And so I think that's something that parents have to take into consideration, that maybe accepting a different pathway to get where your end goal is something that you might have to accept if your goal is to play at the highest level from, I mean, what is the highest level? Because there's some really good Division II schools and Division III schools and NAIA schools and even JUCOs that could probably beat a lot of the Division I's. So I just think that parents have to shift their mindset because things are different. And honestly, like Chris, like you were saying, there's a new game, right? It's a new game out there. And it's not just the traditional, oh, I play here for 4 years as a youth player. My senior year, I'm going to graduate and I'm going to get recruited. It's a completely different ball game right now for both for the coaches and for players. And if you don't do it right, you end up as that statistic of what, 50, 60%, Don, you said, that end up by their sophomore year not playing or maybe not ever playing again.
Yeah, on Division Two, it was close to 60%. Division One, the lowest number was on the women's side at 30%.
Can
Because
I
they
just
don't ever find a home again.
like run a simulation if I'm like I mean, we were just talking about something similar before we jumped on this, but if I'm a top school and I'm thinking, right, okay, we need some goals next year. Like we haven't scored many, like not much out there. So I'm gonna go look at Division Two and see what's going on. I'm gonna look at their rankings, find out who's scoring goals. So I'm looking at the rankings. I'm not gonna name names here or anything like that, but I'm looking at, let's say, the top Division Two scorer right now. Okay, let's have a look at him. Is he a senior? Okay, I'm looking into him. Oh, he's a freshman. This is real. I'm just doing this as if I was like, this is lazy recruiting, by the way, but it's kind of like this is what happens because there's only a certain amount of staff and resources. Okay, right. He freshman scored goal a game. Team's done really well this year. Okay, American kid. I don't know his background. Don't know why he's gone there, but I'm looking at him now. Because they're probably going to go to regionals, nationals, and stuff like that. And he will probably, I'd be interested to keep an eye on him, not stay at that school by year four. But then on the flip side, there's players, and I mean, Andre, I've just sent you a screenshot about
Yeah, I saw
something
that.
that you're asking me. Top Division One schools are asking about players of the similar sort of thing, and I've asked somebody who knows this player in Division Two, and he says like, yeah, it's not suitable for that particular top end Division One. So there's much more to the stats, and that player there is one of the top scorers in the Division Two as well. So you can't just take things by numbers, don't get me wrong, because they could have played against a team and he could have scored 10 goals, and that's just made his stats elevated. But yeah, I just wanted to like kind of simulate that. And that player I'm talking about, the first one, he might go on, and his career would then look like Division Two, played from a freshman year, because I can guarantee you probably a Division One school, a decent one, wouldn't have played any minutes. If anything, he might have been redshirted. And then he's actually played, and then he will step up and play many games throughout his career.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, and it's crazy. I mean, I've had junior college players like that too, that were all Americans that scored 40 goals, and then they go to a Division One level that's probably a little over their head, and score one or two goals, do okay, but people don't understand. As you move up, it is more difficult.
Can I
It
just add
is
to that
more
as well,
difficult.
Don? I had a player I was looking earlier to see how he's got on. He's just finished, just graduated last year. Thought just check out his stats. He was a professional in England. His highlight video and his footage was playing against he didn't play in the leagues, but he played a lot of first team friendlies against like Premier League clubs and stuff like that. So his footage was pretty legit. Professional player, but obviously eligible. He went to Division One. Didn't play any minutes, minimal minutes his first year, then transferred after his first year to a Division Two, a top Division Two school. And I looked at his stats, he didn't start a game. He played minutes, but he didn't start a game for him in 2 years. And
Right.
I'm saying that because of the levels that people don't realize these schools are at.
How good it is, yeah.
And he was a professional.
Yeah. And Andre, you're in and around Indiana. I mean, you see what that looks like. It's very, very, very competitive. Mo
Yeah,
most
I think probably the best thing that any family can do, and I ask kids this, like, have you gone to any games? And they say no. And they don't understand. They don't know. And the classic, I had a call and somebody's like, hey, I'm looking to transfer. My team's not very good. I scored 3 goals my freshman year. I'm like, that's nothing. 3 goals
Right.
is nothing. You're a forward. You should be called, if you're scoring 10 goals, maybe you'd have like a conversation with somebody, but what's you're coming from a team that's not very strong and you scored 3 goals. The question is going to be, what have you done to really help your team when you've had
Right.
one? When you've had one win.
Right. Guys, I thought it might be interesting for those listening if we talk about how the transfer portal actually works for a player. Like, what are the steps that a player should take to enter the transfer portal? It's crazy because I don't understand. Do you know what's going on, Andre? Like, I see on social media kids posting, Division One women are posting, I'm in the portal. And it's
They're
like,
not
well,
in
how
the
does that
portal.
work? The season's still going on and the window's not
They're
open yet.
not in the portal until November 15th. So November 15th to December 15th.
You know what they're doing when they say I'm officially in the portal? What's going on?
I don't know if there's, I got to check, but maybe, I mean, I think there's an exemption if your coach gets let go, right? Or resigns.
You get a 30-day exemption. We
It could be
looked
like
had to look that one up the other day.
they can probably do it. They can probably do that early
Yeah.
before.
That maybe
And
that's what it is.
I don't know, but I'm seeing some kids do it, and I'm like, I've got to get a better handle of that. I don't really know the answer, but I just know that from every coach that tells me the portal opens December 15th. Or
Yeah, so
it could be also if you're a graduate, right? I think that's the other thing too, is if you know you're graduating,
oh, maybe that's it. Although some of these
I
I've
don't
been
know.
looking at are, I have 3 years of eligibility type of thing, so they got to be younger.
Yeah, I don't know. I would
So I'm
have to
not
do a little bit
sure.
more research on that and find out what that means.
That's interesting. Well, the first thing that the kids need to do, I always say, is talk to your coach before you talk to anybody else. And I always tell players, Don't discuss with your teammates if you're thinking about it, because even your, no, but they're my best friend. I can trust them. It's like, don't talk about it with anybody. Wait till the season is over. Keep your mouth shut. You can talk to your parents, and if you have an advisor back home that you trust, you can talk to them, but keep your mouth shut till you go talk to the coach. Because, if your team's playing and if you're in the season, if you unless you want to be shut out and shunned, coaches don't want kids walking around talking about leaving in the middle of their season. That's poison to a team. Would you agree with that piece?
100%.
Yeah, keep
Like
your
I
mouth shut. And then so, but when the time comes, then you have a discussion with your coach, and usually it's at your exit meetings. And then it's pretty simple. You go to your compliance officer and you tell your compliance officer, and I think they have 24 hours or 24 business hours in a business day to be able to get you into the portal. So they'll enter you right away and you'll be in the portal. And one of the things that I advised all my clients and anybody I'm talking to about transfer is there's a very, very important question you need to ask your coach. And it is, what are you going to tell other coaches when they call you to ask about me? So I think you need to assume that they're going to call and ask about you. And I always tell players, if your story and the coach's story don't match up, the coach doesn't have a problem. As a player, you have a problem if the stories don't match up, because most coaches are going to take the coach's side. What do
Yeah,
you
and there's
think about
definitely some
that,
there, yeah, and
Andre?
there's definitely some red flag words that I always hear, like, oh, it's toxic. As soon as I hear that, I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Like what's your definition of toxic? Or, is it the coach? Is it the environment? Like, what is it that you think it's to I mean, I hear it at the club level, I hear it at the at the college level. You hear it everywhere. That's a word that it's like a buzzword that everybody uses now. Oh, the environment, the culture is toxic and this and that. I'm like, okay, what does that really mean? Well, this and this and that. And I'm like, okay, that's just a coach making a decision, right? Or, it's this is, because perception is everybody's reality. But I would say communicate with your coach. And the really good programs, midway through the season, they're already having those conversations with players. The really good programs are already letting kids know, hey, we're gonna have let's have a mid-year conversation. I just don't see you playing this year right now.
Right.
And you need to understand that.
And that's the first time anyone's ever been told that if they're there. Do you know what I mean? They've had a youth
And that's
career
and
where
it's
they've been the best player.
it's yeah, and it's really hard. And some kids are like, hey, I really appreciate that. And what they'll say is like some players will say, will you help me find a place that I can play? And the good coaches will say, absolutely. And like what we were talking about before, that pecking order, if you're at a top program and that coach says, yeah, I'll help you, it's good for the coach to have that player go and leave in a good place. It's good. And what we used to have back in the day was APR, academic progress, that was the number. You had like the 1,000 was the magic number. You had a kid come, they retained, they had good grades, and you wanted to have that number, that APR number, to be at the highest point possible so that you didn't get NCAA penalties for not graduating kids and having kids transfer and not finding different schools. So now, because of the transfer portal, it just helps play, it helps the coaches, it helps the players. And no one even talks about APR anymore. That used to be a thing. The whole purpose of going to college, come in, get your education, develop some character, some leadership skills, move on. Maybe if you're a good enough player, lifelong relationships. Maybe if you're a good enough player, you graduate and you continue with your playing career, or you leave early and you go and play pro. No one even talks about that anymore.
It's a
It,
professional
it's
soccer
it's
system,
it,
that's why.
it's a professional system now, right? And so not everybody's going to be a professional. 99% of the kids are not going to be a professional. So be really choosy before, and that's what we talk. That's, we talk a lot about this with kids that we work with, and I know I do. I'm like, my goal is to help you find a place that is the right fit so that you don't look to transfer and you start there and you graduate there and you're a proud alumni of that university.
Just to jump on that one, Andre, like in the staff group earlier, I shared that team that has not won a game this year from Division Two men's. And the reason I showed you that is because I was speaking to a client earlier. His dad actually used to play in the Premier League, and from is a football agent himself. And his son, not quite at that level, he knows that. And his degree was the most important thing, so he actually went to this particular school because of the degrees. It's really good, and also you can finish it in 3 years. He messaged me saying, and they actually both messaged me saying, "Chris, just want to say a massive thank you, like, for helping set this up." He's just got a new job. He starts in when he graduates, and the package is really good. It's in finance and automobile industry, whatever it is, and he's so excited. And it's all because of, like, well, one, you helping him, which obviously that's obviously fine, but going to that particular school. So he would like obviously he would like to have won, but it's not always about the everyone just talks about professional. I found, and this sounds, I don't mean to be derogative, but like a lot of parents are like, "Oh yeah, my son's gonna go pro." Like, it's almost like they just want, he just, "Oh, I'm deciding to go pro. It's because I want to be." It's almost like a pay to play thing. "I'm gonna
I'm
go pro."
deciding.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go pro. I'm like, such a different mentality in the US versus internationally. Internationally, no one ever talks about turning professional because it's not in your hands. But the Americans, I mean, it might be a good thing. Like, they've got that sort of confidence. Like, it's almost like it's in their hands. And it, because of the pay to play system, you're paying for things, getting up through the systems. And then this is why we get a lot of amnosity when you get to the college stuff, because parents are not getting what they want for their. And this is not everyone. I don't mean to sound bad, but their investment that they've put together for this player throughout the years is not going to pay off in their eyes from a professional. Does that make sense? I don't mean, I'm probably wording that wrong, but
Their
you know what I'm trying
return
to
of
say.
investment for what they've put in from a youth standpoint is not adding up, and
Yeah,
they're not playing,
it
and the kid's not playing, and so now there's some resentment towards that.
yeah. I mean, in my household, I've got a 12-year-old. I've got obviously younger ones, but 12-year-old. I'm probably the worst. My son will probably never turn professional because of this mentality. But I'm always saying, like, the odds you'll never turn pro. Like, just look at it. You're not doing this, this, and this if you want to do that. So, but a lot of people just think it's a thing that can happen. But yeah, going back to your point, the school, you've got to figure out the journey for the life you're going to have after it, because 99% of you are not going to be in that professional game. And then last night we recorded a podcast with one of our former clients, Dan Nimick, who is a professional, and he talked about even in the league he's in now, and like, it's not the greatest league, and the money is not unbelievable, and he's got a biomed degree, which he said he probably never used, but yeah, there's a long life ahead. Even if you made it in the Premier League and you made enough money to retire, there's a whole new life after that, but most people are not going to do that, so it's kind of pointless talking about it.
Andre, what do you tell? So, what do you tell these kids that haven't played? They don't have college highlights on film. So all they have is youth highlights that might be a year or 2 years old. What do you tell them?
Tell them the truth.
What?
You're not going to go anywhere. Like you're not gonna like if I'm sitting there as a, if I'm sitting on this side of the table and you're on that side of the table, and you say you want to come here, if I don't know who you are and I haven't watched you play and you've never played, it's going to be difficult for me to say I'm just going to go based off of a transfer portal. You're going to come here and play here. That it's going to be difficult. However, I will say this, Don, is that one of the pieces of advice I give players, I say, okay, number one thing you should probably do is connect with the coaches that were recruiting you previously.
Good
Because
advice.
they know who you are,
Good
right?
advice.
And I've had that. I've had players that went to Florida, I had players that went to University of Portland, and they came back and they were like stars for us, right? I always say, like we always talk about, make sure there's relationships and you leave things when you say, no, thank you, I'm gonna go here. Keep those doors open at some point and always be polite. Reach out to those coaches and first and see where you're at. Because obviously those coaches, thought of enough of you as a player 2 years ago that maybe that they're open and willing to give you a chance now, a little bit older, and maybe you've been playing at a higher level situation. And I look at kids and I'm like, oh man, you were playing with Clive Charles, you were playing with Becky Burley at Florida. Your environment that you're coming from is going to help us because it's going to elevate what we personally need, right? Because you understand that environment and you're going to hold people accountable. And so I think that's the number one. Number two is I ask them, I'm like, okay, I always talk about you get 7,200 minutes over the course of your 4 years as a player. Right now, you've probably wasted about, 3,600 of those minutes. What do you want with the other half of that? Do you want to play, or do you want to, do you want to have a legitimate chance to play, or do you want to have to fight it out and battle it out? And if they say, I want to play, I'm like, okay, well, then you should look at this option, this option, this option, and this option. And then the last part is, okay, you've already spent a lot of money going to college for 2 years. How do you want to invest the rest of your money? And what do you want to get out of it from an academic standpoint? And typically that's the point of the conversation where the parent goes, okay, this makes sense. The academics are really going to matter because I think they've seen the first 2 years and they're realizing like my kid didn't do as well as I thought, right? She's not as good or he's not as good as I thought they were. Now I just want my kid to be happy and have an opportunity to play. And then also let's get an education out of this. Because
Chris, how should a
those
player like,
parents, Don, those parents
what's
are
that?
tired because those parents are tired of driving to games and never seeing their kids play.
Do you know what though? I wish all the parents were like that. And like, it's my son, our daughter's not as good as I thought they were. But the ones I deal with and have done recently, it's the coaches are not good
Yeah.
enough. But that's, yeah, separate issue.
Yeah, Doug Quint, one of our other guys, and I were having a discussion about a player like this, and everything that we've seen from this player and the family is it's always somebody else's fault. No matter what's gone wrong in the kid's career, it's always been somebody else's fault. And yeah, I'd hope that the transfer, at 18, at 19 or 20 years old, when players are typically trying to transfer. Or could be 21, 22. At that point, you've been an adult for a few years, and I would hope you're able to, make an assessment. What I was going to ask you, Chris, is how do you advise a player like that? Like, how should they approach the conversations with college coaches differently than say a high school player who would be talking to college coaches? Should they be asking different questions? Should they be, how do you sell yourself to a college coach if you've, failed at your level? How should they be approaching the conversation with the college coach?
Well, now, yeah, like now it's a different scenario. Before it's like puff your chest out, I'm the best player. But now it's like kind of like tail between the legs a little bit. So you can't re you've got to almost be vulnerable with the scenario. It just depends on like I think before entering the portal you need a plan. Like you said, Andre mentioned there maybe like obviously there's schools that you could speak to that tried to recruit you before. The questions are, I mean, look, there's a lot of times where you're getting a certain amount of money and you want to move, but then why would a coach give you money if you've not proved? Do you know what I mean? There's so many variables and examples of like what the sort of profile you try to explain there, but what sort of questions? I don't really know. Just like, I guess it's just, it depends on what's important to you. Like, look, if you've hit a point where like playing is really important, then you're obviously going to have to realistically look at your levels and go, I'm going to aim at a school that I think I'm actually going to be suitable for. And sometimes, actually, that's not you to decide that. You might not even realize, and you might have to ask for some advice to the coaches, where should I be aiming? But when you're speaking to coaches, just saying, look, do you see me playing? Coaches sometimes will tell you what you want to hear, but a lot of times we'll be honest. The money side of things, the academics, yeah, I don't know. Andre, what do you think? I'm kind of stuck there.
I think look at what the degree is that you want. Like if you like classic case, oh, I want to be a physical therapist. Okay, you still have 5 years. If you've played two, you've been out of school for 2 years, you still have 5 years of school left. How much do you want to invest in year three, year four, year five, year six, year seven, right? Because it's figure that out. So are you willing to go to a place where you have to fight for your time? Because if that's the case and the coach is not asking you to leave in the first place, from the first place, why would you leave? Right? If you're why are you going to leave? You're going to go through across the same thing and you're going to get the same. And some kids, honestly, they just like, oh, I just want to be at a bigger school. I want to be at a big school. I'm like, but you're not going to get on their roster because you're not going to make an impact. That's the thing that's hard to explain to them. It's like, there's just no room. There's no
Play
room
club.
for,
Play
there's
club is the
no,
answer.
remember like back in the day, it used to be, you could have, oh, good grades, good character, not going to cause you any problems. And coaches would be like, okay, that kid can probably, bump my team GPA. I'm going to hang on to that kid. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah, they were
And
number 34, 35 on the roster.
it's just different. And so I just have to sometimes just be really, just it sucks. You just have to be really straightforward and realistic with the kid. And I'm looking at, I'm scrolling through some things, and you always know when there's a end of the year meeting at a school, the week of, the day of, because you have three to four kids from the same program posting on Twitter that they're entering the transfer portal at the same, like literally bam, 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 bam. So they already know that this is happening because they already have their formatted tweet that they're going to post. And it's like 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, like boom, 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 boom. Like they already know, these kids already know that it's coming, or they already have it in their heads. And then, like Don said, beware of having these conversations with your teammates about transferring, because I do know for a fact, as a former college player, and I do know for a fact, as a former college coach, how often teammates sabotage each other
To get leverage.
to get leverage. But also, if this player leaves and I stay, that's less, one less player I have to deal with.
That's what I meant, yeah.
There's a lot that goes into this. And I tell kids all the time, like, don't share what you're trying to do. Let them go through their process, and they're going to try to sabotage you. And no coach wants an energy vampire on their roster at the end of the day. And they're going to get rid of you. You're gonna get let go, and then you have no choice. I have to enter the transfer portal.
Do you
And
know what? Just,
I think that's important too, is like figure out, like for coaches, why are you getting into the transfer portal? That's the question I would ask as a college coach. Like, why are you leaving?
I kind of wish that was like on. I mean, we can't see the transfer portal, but I've been shown the screenshots of it in the past. It'd be interesting. I wish you could see like why they're in. Like coaches have said not going to play. Do you know what I mean? I wish there was a bit more to it. But you mentioned there about social media, like for the high school sort of like category of players, I think social media, like creating accounts, all that sort of stuff, it's just noise. But I think there's something with social media for the transfer portal for players, in my opinion. Do you agree or no?
Yeah, I think it gives, well, I mean, you basically get back on the market, right? Like you're showcasing that you're back on the market. Are you mean on from a
There's less
popular
noise
standpoint?
because less of you doing that, so you kind of stand out a little
Yeah,
bit more.
but what happens when you have 2,800 players doing it at the same time?
Yeah, but there isn't. That's the thing. There's probably
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
yeah, the
Look,
minute. I
I know
and
we've seen some polls on this, and different organizations have polled college coaches on this, and it depends on who's answering. I always say, look, I've coached at a college that if I wasn't the most aggressive recruiter, I couldn't even fill a roster because nobody wanted to come up to the mountains to live in a town of 5,000 people. Nobody had ever heard of our school. It wasn't like we were winning national championships year after year. I had to be uber aggressive as a coach. And that, had social media been like it is now, I would have absolutely actively been on social media going after anything and everything that moved that looked like they might be able to help me fill my roster, especially on the women's side. There were years when I wasn't even getting my 15th or 16th player until, June and they or July, and they were reporting in August. So those coaches, and there are a lot of schools like that across the country that can't fill a college roster. There are Division I teams in this country that have had to drop out of competition like they did last year, that can barely recruit a roster of 15, 16 players at the Division I player. Those coaches might be more desperate, but generally, the schools that kids, especially the schools that players tend to mention that they would like to be at, are not going to social media to figure out, oh, I need a player. Let me go to Twitter. Let me go to Instagram and let me see what players are posting and are available to me. And let me pay attention to all the players that are tagging me. They don't need it. It's not the way that they're recruiting. So, I know what the polls say, but depends on what coaches you're polling, right? It's no different than, a Republican pollster, polling only Republicans, and that they will get a different answer than if they poll half Republicans and half Democrats. It's going to be a different answer. The polls are going to look different. So that's something I just want people to be aware of, because we get that question a lot. Should I be on social media? Should I be on X? Should I be on Instagram? Should I be tagging coaches? My answer is you can if you want. It's not going to hurt you. As long as you aren't posting, pictures of you drinking with your friends, which hopefully kids would never do, or doing something stupid or breaking the law, posting obscene or objectionable material. Then it's not going to hurt you. You can do it. But if that's your strategy to get recruited, I think you're going to be highly disappointed. I've seen there are some kids, Andre, that you and I have noticed on social media and talked about that are the most active players you've ever seen, ever.
And those
And
kids,
they,
I've seen them now looking to transfer twice, some of those kids.
some of those kids. Yeah, it doesn't mean that that's how it's going to work out for you. So that, because one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about is, so how does a player be proactive? So I go into the transfer portal. I've had the discussion with my coach. Coach said they're going to say good things about me. They'll try to help if they can. So everything's looking okay. I don't have film, but I put things together. I'll use my high school film, and I've got some coaches I'm going to reach out to, of schools that I think I want to be at. How do I do this? What should I do? How do I become proactive? What would you say, Andre?
I think number one, figure out your decision making in terms of what you want to do. If you are, and this was, I was going to jump in earlier. I said, if you are a player that has a legitimate plan to play professionally and you're in that path and that trajectory, have that conversation with a coach and just say, hey, here's my goal. I want to get to this level. What do you think? Some of these mid majors now, they've come to have a moment of clarity, and they're like, I know that I'm going to have to help these kids get to a bigger school. We know that. And so some kids have these conversations with their coaches. They tell them what their end goal is. And they're like, hey, look, if you're really looking to be a pro, we need to help you find a better school. And I'll give you a classic example. Hugo Baccarat was at Etor in Spain, right? Like an academy. He went to Farley Dickinson, right? He got to Farley Dickinson and became an All-American at Farley Dickinson, and he said, I want to make it as a pro. And I think he got the advice that someone gave him advice and said, listen, if that's the case, then you need to transfer to a bigger program. And he went to Indiana and he had a really good year at Indiana and he ended up getting drafted in MLS, right? There are some kids that are looking to transfer because financially it's not a good situation. So do some homework in terms of like, okay, what can your family afford? Does that mean you're gonna have to go back in state, right? Like if you're a California kid and you go to the East Coast and you can't afford an $80,000 a year school anymore, maybe you have to transfer back and go to a UC or a Cal State school. So kind of have that as part of your plan, like the reason why. And then I have kids, like I just had a kid reach out to me from a school out in the Midwest. Their her nursing program was put on probation. And so I said, that's a perfect reason why you should transfer, is
Right.
that academically you no longer have, you no
Right. I had
longer
a client have their major dropped one
have the
year.
major drop. And so
Things like that.
that's so what are the schools that you were looking into, and can you do both? Because that's the other question, right? Can you do both? Well, I want to play Division One. Like maybe that's not going to happen at Division One because you can't do both at Division One. It's going to be really hard to find a school that you can, and maybe the minutes that you have right now are not going to warrant you being able to transfer to Division One school. Let's look at Division Two schools. Okay, I'm open to that. That I think you have to kind of have some planning in that. And then the other thing is use resources, use the people that you know, right? Like relationships is really important in recruiting on the first side of it. Relationships are going to be just as important on the second part of it. But use people that you know you're going to trust and that are going to give you solid advice. And like we always talk about, is that going to tell you what you need to hear versus what you want to hear? Because
And I'll shamelessly plug that we have a SRUSA as a transfer club. If anybody, again, just like our regular service, we can't take everybody, but if you need help in the transfer process, you're always welcome to reach out to us. And at least you're going to get some good advice and some directions we can point you to. But it could be someone like us, or it could be your club back home. Maybe your club coach is willing to jump in and help you. Maybe they helped you the first time. Maybe they're willing to help you now. But I do think it's important that if you feel stuck in any way, that you get advice from somebody who's got some experience.
And a pulse of what's going on.
And a finger on the pulse of what's going on. Yeah, no, I think that's important. What do you say to the, what do you tell players, Chris, when I'll tell you what I tell sophomores. I mean, I get, or freshmen, it's like everybody has a bad freshman year. Not everybody, but that's normal. But what do you tell players that want to leave at the first sign of adversity, Chris, or maybe they didn't start their freshman year and they just want to bolt? What's the advice that you give to them?
Usually just like honest advice. So for example, like you're saying there, they haven't been playing, right? It's funny, we had a player today, he's gone to a Division Three, good academic. He's a good academic kid, so he kind of went Division Three, but he's hardly playing. Well, he's basically played two games all year. So he's messaging me saying like, Chris, and he's pretty like realistic, so it's not a bad
This is a
situation.
freshman.
Freshman, yeah, played two games, and he's basically said like, Chris, I'm not sure what to do. I'm not even playing. I'm not even playing in the training games, and I want to transfer. And I'm like, I just basically said to him like, I left him a voice note. I was like on the move, but I was like, look, the situation is you can't even start for a very average Division Three team. So if you're a college coach and you want to transfer into them, and you need some money and stuff like that, like, are you going to be a hot commodity? And he's just like, yeah, I know. So I said, you've got two choices, really. One, you can leave and try. And I said, basically what I've told him is, I think probably going to a lower level junior college, getting some game time, or sticking it out and try and get back in the team. But players who have kind of like got that sort of like played two games first year, they're not, it's very rare they'll change that, they'll turn that around. You never know, it might not. But so I'm just usually, it's just all about being honest with them, and everyone's obviously situation is completely different. But when like adversity can mean a variety of things, but typically it's like not playing. So I try to make people like, my first thing is stick it out, grind, work hard, and just try and get back in the team. End of the day, there's only 11 starters, and there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to play. So that's football soccer. So, but yeah, I mean, that's my first piece of advice, really. I tell people is just kind of try and get through it. There are obviously situations where you know there's end, it's the end of the road, and I always say to people, like, if you're a coach and you get an email, what does your subject line say about you? So if you're a Division Three non-starter with a bad GPA, you're not as recruitable as somebody who's Manchester United under 21's 4.0 GPA. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've always got to, like, people don't, I just don't think people, enough people actually sit down, look at themselves and go, what does my, like, black and white profile look like?
Right.
No matter how much you think you like, even right now, I'm 41 years old, I can watch Premier League and go, well, to be fair, I don't, but I could watch maybe lower leagues and go, I could probably step into that. I couldn't at all, by any means. Like, it's not anywhere even near that. But you can still think that because it's really hard to self-reflect on certain things. But yeah, people just need to get really, really, really honest, and ask advice. Just say to people, like, what do you think? But yeah, adversity, I don't know, to be honest with them. To answer that question, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's I try to tell people you have to understand. I know you feel like you're alone in this the way that you feel. I mean, I think just humans feel that way a lot when they're going through a bad spot in their life. It's like, why me? It's not why you, it's why humans. It's like, why the human condition? And for a freshman, for an 18-year-old moving away from home, especially, having to negotiate life on their own for the first time in their life. Having to make new friends, having to fit into a new environment, going from an environment, a soccer playing environment where you were one of the better players on your team to everybody was the best player on their team, now in college, and having to navigate and negotiate that, and then the sadness of not getting to play because that was your happy place, being able to play. That's normal. That's the life of a freshman. For the most part, that's for 80, 90% of freshmen in the country. That's the way it's going to go for them. And as long as the coach isn't telling you, leave, get out of here, you're never going to play for me. I don't want you around anymore. If the coach is saying, no, we like you, we just think you need to develop in this area and that area, and we've enjoyed having you around, it means, stick it out to your sophomore year. Now, if at the end of the sophomore year things have gone no better for you, that's a little different. What would you agree, Andre?
Yeah, and I forgot about this completely for last year was the DSA, the designated student athlete.
Which means what?
It means that you were given the ability to designate X amount of number of athletes as DSAs that were protected so that you didn't have to cut them outside of your 28 player roster.
Right. It means they didn't
Right?
count against your
It didn't count
28-man
against you and it
roster.
doesn't count against them in terms of their eligibility. And they're looking to transfer. So if you're a DSA and the coach says, hey, you know what? You're good here because you don't count against my roster. Right? Like you're part of that development. I see you long term in your development. If you were not a DSA, that's when I would probably be a little bit more worried, is that like, hey, I don't know if you see value in me as a player, right? And I think that's where
So
every
that's, by
team
the way,
was
real quick,
fair.
on that's Division One only
That's
that
Division One
applies to.
only.
That's
Yeah,
not
that's Division
Division
One
Two
only.
or
Yeah, but
Division
I think
Three,
at the end of the
right? Okay.
day, everybody wants to feel valued.
Sure.
That's at the end of the day, they want to feel valued and they want to feel like my return of investment for the time I'm practicing and I'm putting in for this, I'm going to get playing time. Well, that's not necessarily the case. And we know plenty of professional players that have made a professional living of sitting on the bench. Right? They're good training partners, they're good for the team. They just never get called into the
Good for
game.
morale, right?
They just don't get called into the game because they just never are given there's just not enough opportunities for them to get into those situations. I think at the college level, it's 4 years, it's really short. go where you can play, go where you can get an education, go where you feel like you're going to be valued as a player. Because I have plenty of teammates that played at really good teams, but were really bitter about their experience because they didn't play. And ultimately, that's the number one thing that comes out of the senior exit interviews is, I wish I would have played more. I felt like I got deceived, that I was told, just keep working, keep doing this. I did everything that I was supposed to, but I didn't get on the field and I didn't play. Find a place where you can go and make an impact. That to me, if you're looking to transfer, go somewhere where you can make an impact. If you have to go down, no problem. Like down in terms of P4, mid-major, mid-major, Division two, Division two, NAIA, Division three, or do the 4-2-4.
And don't burn any
And
bridges either.
don't burn any bridges.
Chris, I mentioned in the podcast we recorded yesterday with Dan, but I'll never forget Bobby Clark talking about the importance of going where you're wanted. Going where you're wanted. It's such two different recruiting experiences for a player, one being, you are a highly recruited athlete and we want you here versus, yeah, you're already coming to school here. Okay, I have an extra roster spot. You can have that. You can have a roster spot. That second player isn't going to get the same opportunity as the first player it is.
Them days are gone though, Don. That's the thing.
What's that?
Them days are gone now. You can have a roster spot.
Well, yeah,
For
at
Division
certain
One.
levels, right? We're still at Division Two. I was talking to one of our guys this morning, and their player is at a Division Two school that has 62 players
Okay. Well,
at
yeah.
it
Then
at a
yeah. Okay.
Division Two school.
Yeah.
And there's
We
and
even
not happy that they're having to train with, the coach brings in 25 players to train and then brings in the rest of the players to train in a separate session at which the head coach isn't even at. A graduate student is running that session with the other
Don,
players.
I would add, go where you're wanted and also where you're needed.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to go where you're wanted, nobody wants to
Yeah.
recruit a player that they don't want. But most importantly, hey, we need you here because this, and this. So make sure whoever you talk to, there's a definitive plan. Like, we're losing a center back. We need a center back with experience, which is what the phone calls that we get, right, Chris? And we talk to coaches. We need players with experience that have this, and this, and this. This kid doesn't have any minutes. Why are you sending me this kid? This kid has solid minutes. Good. This is a player with experience, could be a good fit. So I think that's what's important too, is sometimes as a transfer, you don't know who needs what. And that's where I think people like us or other people that are in the business that know, they'll know the coaches and the programs that need it, that have immediate needs, and they will appreciate the connection and the vetting on the front end. And that's usually where most of the success stories happen with the transfers, is that somebody knows somebody, whether it's your club coach, whether it's a group that works with this business, whether it's a high school coach, whether it's your college coach or junior college coach knows somebody. Let that be probably the most important thing, is that have someone reach out to a coach, a school that you're thinking of, and ask them, is there a need for a player in my position? Because if it isn't, you're just wasting your time. And they're like Chris said, there is no more roster spots, like, just to be given.
Well, you're spot on, Chris, at the D1 level, especially with the 28-man rosters, that there's no room for that developmental player anymore.
I think it's yeah, but I also think it's trickling down now big time to Division Two. Junior colleges now are getting pretty, like, puffing their chests out, like, we can get good players now. We don't need that player for just a roster spot. Like, I don't know. It's
True.
anyway, but I imagine in 5 years from now, it's just gonna be
True.
even worse or better. It depends which way you look at it. But
Yeah, no, hey, it does, because you have now formerly D1 players, players that would have gone D1 are going D2, and players that would have gone D2 are now having to go NAIA. I think that's what you're saying, right? Or junior college. Is that what you're saying, Chris? That's it. Yeah, makes
That
sense.
fact, yeah.
Logical.
I think just like almost like not to conclude, but more or less, I mean, if people made it this far, then one, like, congratulations. And but two, like, there's sort of two sort of categories of people that would be listening to this. Like, it's the people who were kind of before college, like, okay, what's this transfer portal thing? I'm gonna listen and figure it all out and kind of use this knowledge for before. And then it's kind of learning like how it works, and like, okay, I don't want to make the mistakes. And obviously the people who are now in this situation, what is the transfer portal? How can I get through it? Oh my God, what's my situation I've got to deal with, and so on. But like, if I mean, primarily the people we deal with are the people who are in that before category. And even while we was talking, I thought I'm just going to look at like the Division One men's like top goal scorers, point scorers. And I looked at a couple of guys on there. I recognized the names, and they were at kind of like mid-major schools, if not even lower a little bit. And I was like, I recognize them from a junior college. So they've done 2 years at a junior college in Nebraska, who won the national title last year. And that's the coach has gone there. And you use the word aggressive recruiting, like you used to have to do with Feather River College. Aggressively recruited for players he shouldn't even been allowed to speak to, got them in, and then they've moved on, and then like they're in the top sort of 25 of the points and goals of Division One right now. They've done 2 years at junior college, gone to Division One, and probably they might even move again. And people, if you get this right, it works really well. Obviously, they didn't enter the transfer portal because they're junior colleges, and we're kind of just talking transfer in general. But if I use the transfer portal example of one of our clients, Callum Frogson, he went to, he was just a good player, wasn't physically sort of ready. He wanted to go Division One, like da, 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 the usual stuff. And this is obviously 3, 4 years ago now. And he's in senior year right now. So we got him into a kind of an average Division Two because he needed a big scholarship, so he had to accept it. So went there, got all conference, all region, year one and year two. Transferred to FAU, Florida Atlantic, got all conference, and now he started every game and played nearly every minute for UNC Chapel Hill in his senior year. Like, he's my example of like how to use the transfer portal to his sort of, well, the positive side of things, but to his advantage. And like, finding a few more details out about that, he'd done the 2 years, felt he got to his kind of point with that school, fair enough, put himself in, but he'd also played in the USL too in the summer leagues, spoke to people on other teams. They told their coaches he entered the portal, got recruited, and then he's kind of done the same thing after his 1 year at FAU. And then he's now at UNC Chapel Hill. So he's a really good example of like what you can do if you get this right. Now, if you're in that category of like you're in this portal system now, and you're at Division 3, 2, whatever, not playing, and you're looking to scramble around, then it's a different scenario. And unfortunately, that's a lot of the stuff we said about is not really for you. But ultimately, you can't go back in time. You can only deal with moving forward. And it's just all about getting honest with yourself. But yeah, just thinking what's really important for you right now. You're not a freshman, sorry, a senior in high school anymore. You kind of, right, I've got to figure out what my life's going to look like, and do I need to move down, across, whatever, and what's important to me. So, yeah, sorry, a little extra
No,
rant.
it's okay. I think the moral of that story is that Callum produced though at every level. I think the one time it bothers me, I hear
Yeah.
kids, hey, I'm just gonna go to this school with the idea that I am going to transfer up right away before they've even produced. I think that it's really important that when you go to whatever your school is you commit to, that you give all of your efforts to that school. And stop thinking about transferring. Let your results speak for themselves. And then, if you need to transfer, you can talk about parlaying a successful and highly successful. We're not talking about, hey, I was the first player off of the bench, so I was the 12th or 13th best player on my team. As you said, a player like Callum was, all regional, all American, all conference, those types of players.
Yeah, there's a lot of the opposite of that as well.
Opposite being pl players that don't do well, you mean?
Don't produce, yeah.
Right. It's
So it's
silly
easier.
to think that you're going to transfer or
Yeah.
transfer up,
To me, yeah,
certainly.
I mean, look, we're kind of talking about the transfer portal and like saying all the things about it, and people are going to go, yeah, I'm going to go to college. And I speak to people and say, look, this is not a, we're not looking at this as like a 1 year thing. It's about a strategy for the 4 years. And I do talk about transfer portals a lot because ultimately that's where we're at with this college system now. These people who have ability are not going to go to probably the school they deserve to be at if it was year four. So they've got to play the
Right.
system. And
Right.
the
That's fair.
transfer portal is
Exactly.
part of the system.
Well, fellas, we've been at this a while. This is going to be one of our longest ones, but I think it was important. We talked about how important it was for us to kind of update everybody on the transfer portal and what we see and how it's changed for freshmen coming in, for high school seniors coming into college. How the system's changed. Anything that you wanted to add that we haven't, that came to mind, Andre?
No, the only thing I'm going to add is that this could be a fantastic podcast to listen to if you are driving through Texas.
Or
Yeah.
you're struggling to get to sleep.
Oh, you're struggling to get to sleep. There you go.
Or so.
Hopefully
All right. Well, a lot of good information here. Hey,
freshman
everybody,
card,
if you
by
need
the
to get
way.
a hold of us, srusasoccer.com. You can if you're thinking that I'm a little bit young, or my son's a little bit young, and maybe they need a little more experience before entering to go to college, go to gapyearsoccer.com. Andre's one of the guys in our main guys in our company who's been talking to parents and of players and talking to players about going to England or going to Spain or maybe Germany, get various gap year options to academies that we've vetted, that we've talked to, that we know, that we trust. So gapyearsoccer.com, SRUSA, follow us on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on X. And thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on. It's been good.
Thank you, Dom.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone.